I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. We are still quarantined. The NBA season has no return date in sight. And so we've turned to a special guest, Iman, to talk about a very special person, Kyle Lowry.
Hello.
How you doing?
Excited.
How's quarantine for you? This is like the icebreaker for everybody. Like, what's your routine like?
It's good. I still have to work. I'm not leaving my house from work. I get to work from home. I'm very fortunate for that. So waking up every morning, getting to work, not like just doing it in pajamas and it turning off my laptop and that being the end of my day. So is that a lot of what a writer's job is? Do you just work from home a lot?
I was gonna say, this is not that much different for me. I mean, okay. I'm not going to like Scotiabank anymore, but no. I don't know. Working from home all the time is weird. Like, I felt like throughout the weekend and stuff, it was like hard to differentiate that it was like a weekend versus like a work day, but ultimately speaking, we're pretty fortunate. At least we have to like be indoors and be safe and stuff. So Kyle Lowry. So basically my idea was that I wanted to talk about some of the Raptors in a lot of depth, because I feel like we don't necessarily take the time to appreciate everyone as much during the course of the season, because we're focused on like game to game and trends and trades and all this other stuff. I think like now that the season has stopped, really, first off, I miss these people. I miss this team so badly. And especially with Kyle, I think he has such an incredible story. So I think we could start here. You and I are both in agreement. Kyle Lowry, greatest Raptor of all time. Yes?
Easily.
Yeah. I mean, not that we need the numbers, but numbers as they stand currently, Kyle Lowry is second in Raptors all-time games played, first in assists, first in steals, third in points, first in win shares. And actually first in win shares by quite a bit, to be honest, because like, I think second is Chris Bosh. Yeah.
Not a very winning team he was on.
Fair enough. Chris Bosh might have more win shares than the Raptors had wins back then, to be honest. So yeah, he's the greatest player in Raptors history. But I think there's like a long story of how Kyle got to get here, because like, unlike a lot of superstars or whatever, like Kyle was never thought of as that. You know, we can start at his arrival, right? So he gets to Toronto via trade, first round pick to the Houston Rockets along with Gary Forbes in 2012. First off, do you have any Gary Forbes memories?
None at all.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, I was looking through the notes and I was like, oh yeah, he was a part of that deal. Like, he's a part of one of the greatest trades in Raptors history. So,
yeah. Anyway, first off, big shouts to Colangelo for doing this, because he did not have a lot of great
trade.
Yeah, he didn't have a lot of great moves. This is a really good one.
I find that with a lot of Colangelo moves, it happened because something else failed, which is what happened here, of course. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of the best Colangelo moves have been something else failing or him correcting a mistake that he made turned into something good in the end. So this is probably the best example of that.
Yeah. And I mean, first off, the story here is nuts, because they have said they were going to get Lowry anyway, but I mean, clearly they weren't, because they already had Jose Calderon, and their plan A all along was to get Steve Nash, which at the time, like, I love Steve Nash. Like, you know, one of the biggest reasons why I became such a big basketball fan. I love the Suns. This man was like 38 years old and the Raptors were going nowhere. And they tried to give him a 3-year, $36 million contract, which was bigger than any other offer on the table. And I've actually, you know, like, obviously the Kawhi pursuit was big, because they had to like really pull out all the stops. You know, they booked that hotel room, you know, they made the pitch, whatever, who knows what else they tried to put on the table for Uncle Dennis and Kawhi to say yes to. But I don't remember another free agency pitch as elaborate as this one, where MLSC got together some of the biggest names in basketball at the time. They got Jay Triano, who was the Team Canada coach when Steve Nash played for Team Canada. And they even got Wayne Gretzky, among others, to make this like whole video. And that was their big pitch, alongside $36 million to Steve Nash, was you could be the next Wayne Gretzky, but of basketball. And Steve was like, I'm good.
Yeah, he decided to play closer to his kids, which tends to be everyone's excuse when they go to the Lakers over the rafters, but our LA team over the rafters.
Wow.
But like, I don't know about you, but I remember like I was on Twitter, like my tweets can be pulled up. Like I wanted Nash, but I didn't want Nash because I thought he was good. I was like, this man is beyond his prime. Like he's on his last legs. But like, if you talk to most Raptor fans right now, they became fans during the We the North era.
Right.
There was like, this is prior to that. And there were no, like, it was like 10 of us. Like and now there's a lot of great basketball content. Like shout out to Yahoo. I'm not saying that because I'm on this right now, but like genuinely there's like, I mean, you guys are killing it, but genuinely there's like a lot of really great basketball content, but even still at the television and radio levels, they're just, it doesn't exist like that. And the internet sports writing isn't what it is today. Raptors Republic was killing it. Shout outs to you again. Yeah. But there really wasn't a lot. So for me, it was like that was the biggest free agency pitch that the Raptors have ever had, and the biggest free agent they were ever going to go get. And I was like, this is about relevance. This is about like us having a game that like people care about. This is about us having a name that people care about. Cause like even still fans complain about Christmas games and you know how many TNT games there are. But at that time, like that was laughable. Like no one even thought that that was a thing. And so for me, it was just like, we're not going to win. We're like, we're not going to be good. The thought of even like competing didn't cross my mind. It was like, let's just get someone to be relevant. And I remember hearing about Lowry, and as soon as I heard about Lowry, and I remembered his like beginning, he got sick, and then Dragic, they had that whole thing, but I remember wanting him, and then there were reports about the two of them together, and I think it was like Lowry's team that was like, he's not going to play backup to anybody. Like, that's not the thing that's going to happen, so I don't know how real that was.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, just honestly, what the Nash thing, and in terms of relevance and everything like that, like, I think the front office had the same idea as you did, which is like, it's not even about winning games, because like the Raptors, I think, were coming out of the season where super irrelevant. First off, they had just hired Dwayne Casey the year before that, and the goal was to play be solid defensively, so definitely going to get 39-year-old Steve Nash fit that bill. Again, brilliant job by Colangelo. But
you
even
have someone to play better defense than Calderon.
Wow. Actually, honestly, I might take 39-year-old Steve Nash over whatever year old Calderon at the
Calderon
time.
Calderon just claps. That was his defense. It was great.
Yeah. He's like, help. But yeah, I mean, as part of that pitch too, MLSC even went to Nash and said, like, you know, why not retire here? This is a great retirement pad, which is just, it's kind of insulting. So anyway, Steve Nash moves on, and the Raptors are like, okay, fine. He's moved on. Let's go get Kyle Lowry. Now, one of the very, very interesting, like, this is like, you know, such a strange thing, but that pick that the Raptors gave up to get Kyle Lowry that was sent to Houston used that pick as part of a package to try to trade for James Harden. And that pick, I think, eventually became Steven Adams. But the interesting thing is that because the Raptors made this trade, they did not have a first-round pick in 2013, the year where, Giannis was in the draft. And Masai was reportedly, before that draft, scouring the trade market, trying to get any pick, because Giannis didn't go until middle of the draft. And so theoretically, there is a timeline where if you never traded Kyle Lowry and none of this ever happened, the Raptors might still hold that pick. It would have been even higher because they would have been worse without Lowry, and they might have got Giannis. This is way back when, but whatever. So they make this trade for Lowry. But at the time, you know, like, Kyle was not Kyle, not even close. Like, the biggest thing, even before we talk about like talent or anything like that, it's just like, he had a terrible reputation. And this, a lot of that came from his time in Houston. Like, do you remember, just like, what were your first thoughts when Kyle Lowry came here? And what were some of your concerns? Because it was not like a slam dunk by any means.
To be honest, I mean, I think one of the things was we got saddled with Landry Fields' contract, which was like another kind of chess piece that happened there. Like, that Lowry trade really kind of changed a lot of different things. But I wasn't too concerned with the malcontent aspect. I really do remember his press conference with Landry Fields, and like I think I tweeted like he doesn't want to be here. Like this is a man who does not want to be here. I was like, he is out the door the first chance he gets. So that was my whole thing, was just like, this is a great player, and like I remember hearing really great things about him, and thinking like, we don't. Like, I want this guy to be the point guard, but I don't think the Raptors have enough to keep him, which really kind of seemed like the case at the time.
Yeah, for sure. So at the time when they got him, there's a 2-year deal. He's coming off that situation in Houston where, so he's talked about it many times, but he was a big fan of Rick Adelman, who was, tactically speaking, a very, very smart coach, one of the greatest coaches of all time. And he coached Houston, and they ran this intricate corner offense, which actually looked a lot like the Raptors' current offense right now. But Adelman gets replaced by Kevin McHale, who comes in and runs more of a more standard offense. And I guess Kyle didn't like it. And, you know, Kyle it can be headstrong at times. And, you know, if Kyle didn't get his way, then he wasn't that happy. Also, you know, there was the point guard controversy with him and Goran Dragic at the time. And so he comes to Toronto. He has this sort of I guess reputation is one way to put it. But, I the one thing that with Kyle that was really inspirational was that after that 2012-2013 season, coming into that year where Masai Ujiri takes over as GM of the Raptors in 2013, like there was a conversation that took place, many conversations that took place for Kyle Lowry, but one of them was between Masai and Kyle to sort of like really turn around his career. Do you remember that period and sort of the stories that came out of that year?
I'll say like even with like the idea of like Lowry really not being Lowry before he got here, and him kind of having the story of like getting drafted obviously in Memphis and then Conley taking that starting spot, then getting sick in Houston and Goran taking that starting spot. We kind of had something similar happening with Jose here, where Brian Colangelo was trying to replace him as a starting point guard. And like, whether it was Jared Bayless or Jared Jack or whoever came, Jose just overtook them. Mm-hmm. And in Kyle's first year, that's exactly what happened. Before his talk with Masai, Kyle got hurt against OKC. I genuinely, like, there's very few things. I don't remember what I had for dinner last night, but I remember that first Lowry season like it was yesterday.
Right.
I remember the games. I don't know why.
He wore number 3.
4-19 start. I remember the game. Fourth game of the season, he gets hurt against OKC. And then Jose comes over, and Jose takes over, and the Raptors went on a 5-game winning streak shortly after, like in December when Amir did that hair thing. Remember that? But I remember being like, okay, well, this is kind of the story. I thought that was going to continue. And then of course, Masai had that talk with him and everything kind of changed. Jose and Ed Davis were shipped out. But I really kind of just thought we were just going to see the same thing where Jose's overtaking this new guy who comes in and Lowry's watching someone else take over his starting spot.
Yeah. I mean, first off, Dwayne Casey, I think he had a policy, and I'm pretty sure he kept to this policy where if you got hurt and you came back, you don't lose your starting job because of that. That was like a real policy that I think the year, remember that random year of 2017 when the Raptors signed Jared Sellinger and he played power forward and he got hurt in training camp, like the one where KD made his debut with the Warriors and Pascal blocked him. But yeah, I mean, Jared Sellinger got hurt, and then when he came back, he started too. So, this is a policy Casey's had, was just like, you don't lose your starting spot when you're hurt. But it did not happen with Kyle.
Nope. Jose was there.
You got to start Jose Calderon. I mean, Colangelo trades, Jose and Ed Davis to Memphis for Rudy Gay. I mean, honestly, to me, the trade wasn't even that bad necessarily because, the Raptors finished that year 18-18 with Rudy Gay, which is not bad considering they started it so badly. But it was just kind of a desperation move by, Colangelo, who was definitely he was about to get fired. He's about to get let go. His position is going to give it to Masai. But he just made this random trade. And for a second, it looked, you thought it was awful? You didn't like it?
I thought it was awful. I have the receipts for anyone who's looking. I always thought it was awful because my whole thing was, I've never been the biggest DeMar guy.
Okay.
And my whole thing was like, do we need another volume shooter? Like, do we, I was completely against the Rudy Gay trade, but I was like, okay, he's best friends with Lowry. Like, mm-hmm. to me, the thinking of Rudy Gay was like, he's clutch, and he was super clutch when he
first came. Was clutch.
He was super clutch. He's clutch, and he's best friends with Kyle Lowry, so maybe that could turn into something, but of course, that didn't work out that way.
Yeah. Shout out Rudy Gay for those two game winners he hit, like, within like the first like five games that he played.
Yeah, it was my sister's, nobody cares, but it was my sister's birthday. I was at a restaurant and I was like, Rudy Gay's gonna hit a game winner. It was close in like the fourth. I think they were playing Denver. And I pulled my phone out and that's exactly what happened. So
yeah. No, Rudy had like one solid month as a Raptor. but whatever. So they go into the offseason, the front office change happens. At the time, it was a pretty big deal because, like, it seemed like MLSC, maybe especially looking back, this was definitely a turning point. But MLSC brings in Tim Leiwicki, and Leiwicki that year, that 2013 summer, he gets to actually make some moves. He gets Masai Ujiri, who's coming off an executive of the year in Denver, brings him here to Toronto. Masai says, we are not going to be caught in the middle, which sounds very much like he's going to blow the team up. And so, Masai, at least he gives the team that he had inherited. Oh, yeah. Well, seriously, Tanker Wiggins was a real big deal at the time, and they almost did it. But
I was calling for it.
Me too, actually. Wiggins looked good at the time. What can we say, man?
Yeah, I was like, and he's Canadian.
Anytime you could take the second best player from Kansas, you got to do it.
Oh, no.
He played with Embiid. But, yeah, I mean, like, so Masai gives him a chance, and that's where Masai has this conversation with Kyle, and I, did some research on this. The quote was, quote, do you want to be a $3 million player, a $2 million player for the rest of your career and become a minimum player? Or do you not want to be a $10 million player or more? He asked. Talent says that you are the type of player or that type of player, but the attitude and the way you carry yourself says the other. You can be so much better. Masai said this to Kyle Lowry. Apparently, during the same meeting, he also handed Kyle Lowry a binder and said, this is going to be you walking up to GMs in the league begging to be a scout. Like, Masai was really just like, yo, this is your future. Shape up. Like, literally shape up, all right? Like, just, take control of this team.
No one will set you straight faster than an African dad.
Yo, Masai was, like, legit. Like, he did everything other than throw the slipper at him.
yeah. Like, and that's exactly what happened. Like, Lowry is now, a $30 million a year player, so...
Yeah, biggest contract in, I guess the biggest annual contract in Raptors history. Obviously, there's been a lot of inflation or whatever, but that, I think, played a big part in Lowry's turnaround. But I also think that, this is something that's also pretty well chronicled, is that Kyle had this, he had this relationship with Chauncey Billups. And it's very interesting because there's some parallels between their career, but Chauncey was always a guy that Kyle really respected. And Chauncey told him, also in that same year, 2013, that, quote, I told him, if you squander this opportunity, this is it for you. I kept telling him, you're going to Toronto was like me going to Detroit. And that was my last real chance. And that was the case for him there now too. So first off, just the parallels there. Chauncey goes to Detroit. Detroit is a perennial Eastern Conference powerhouse. They go to the playoffs. They go to the finals. They win the conference. Slightly better team, but one championship, stuff like that. Kyle Lowry, kind of the same deal with the Raptors, It's really funny how their careers worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people say Chauncey's a Hall of Famer or he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Like, I think we could talk about Kyle's Hall of Fame candidacy later, but the path is kind of the same.
I don't think my take is going to be a surprise on this at all.
Oh, fair enough. So he has these two famous conversations and, that's big. But of course, there was also the Rudy Gay trade that happens late in December. First off, where were you when the Rudy Gay trade happened? Because I have a very distinct memory of this.
Oh, you go first. I don't think I remember.
Okay, so I remember I was in university still. I was like in a classroom or whatever. Like, I don't know. I like to like sit in empty classrooms and do homework and stuff. A lot of space. And I just remember seeing the tweet come across Twitter from Woj was like, yeah, the Raptors have traded Rudy Gay. And I literally jumped up and like jumped and ran out the classroom and like literally was just like yelling up and down the hallways. This was this was late at night. It was like 9 p.m. or whatever. So I'm like, no one was there. And I think it was also a weekend. But yeah, I was just thrilled because like there was that game that I saw before that that honestly like made me want the Houston game made me want to quit watching Raptors basketball. Like I've seen a lot of losses, I didn't care that they lost the game.
He was clutch in that game. Can you remember that?
Oh yeah,
like it was four quarters of garbage, but the last 2 minutes in overtime, he was clutch.
He shot 11 of 37, and then afterwards. He banned stat sheets from the locker room. He's like, no one can see that I've been shooting 11-37.
Listen, he hit the shots that mattered. I rewatched game 7 against the Sixers. I'm not saying they were similar games, but Kawhi kind of had an 11-37 level stat sheet. But he came clutch when it mattered.
Okay.
Came clutch when it mattered.
We're comparing Kawhi to Rudy.
I'm kidding. Don't kill me. I love you, Kawhi.
Yeah, that was big because, like, okay, that trade happens. First off, the team is kind of like stunned. Like, you know, there's a great episode of Open Gym where you actually don't see Rudy because apparently Rudy's agent called him and was like, yo, you're getting traded, so don't go on that bus. But like Aaron Gray and Quincy Acey.
Oh my God.
Yeah, this is a dark time in Raptors history. I'm talking about Rudy Gay and Quincy Acey. It's going to get better, I promise.
Yeah, we're going to get Patrick Patterson and Gervas Vasquez.
Well, they needed a bench.
I love them. I'm kidding.
But yeah, like, you know, they were stunned, and there was a great episode of Open Gym about this. Just seeing like the emotional toll it takes on players to get moved. But like after that, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan apparently talked to each other in practice, and Lowry said to DeMar, "It's on us. Either we're gonna make it, or the front office will break it. Either way, we're gonna make this thing work, or they're gonna blow up even more." And so that was the beginning.
Wow, I didn't know that.
There were 6-12. Kyle and DeMar apparently gathered everyone in practice and was like, yo, listen, like, this is it. We're going to try to make a push for it. And the rest of the season was fantastic. I loved the 2013-14 season.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. It felt like, I think Open Gym is perfect and great every year, but that season felt like a movie.
Yes.
Like rewatching that season of Open Gym back, just like the roller coaster that the Raptors went through, right down to like literally the last second of the last shot of that season in the playoffs, just felt like a movie.
Yeah. Like it was a very incredible time because, like, again, like, we cannot stress this enough. They were 6-12. They had just moved Rudy Gay for like bit pieces. Like, it's cool that, like, you know, Patrick Patterson did some things, Gervas Vasquez did some things. Chuck Hayes, you know, was adorable.
That was Chuck Hayes. He had that one Memphis game that we'll always remember him for.
Yeah, his post defense was needed, you know. that's all he did, but, you know, finally also I got to see myself in an NBA game. I'd probably play a lot like Chuck Hayes. So, and John Salmons, I don't even want to acknowledge him. It was a painful experience to get John Salmons. But, like, yeah, the goal was to tank for Wiggins. Like, they wanted to, like, really tank and, like, Wiggins was coming up in that draft.
Bags are packed.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Kyle literally said, like, he said that, like, look, listen, this was a done deal for him too. Like, he was ready to move on. And it was just one of those situations where, look, you're just going to try to run out the string. And like during the stretch, like, part of the reason it was so fun was they had every single win they had, and they had 48 wins that year. So they're a really good team. But
especially with the 6-12 start. Like,
yeah. They finished the year,
I think it was like a 54 win projection.
Yeah, like 42 and whatever. Sorry.
Something better. Like, that was literally the best. That was the winningest season in franchise history up to that point.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
Wild, yeah.
But, you know, like, it just felt like every single win was like a surprise somehow. And especially early on, they had that win against OKC that was super big. I think Dallas. That was in overtime. Dallas as well. That was against Monte and Dirk Nowitzki, which was a pretty good team at the time.
It was. Yeah, that was a fun team. And, like, you know, we talked about just how crazy everything would have been just with this team had they drafted Giannis. But, you know, had they, like, yes, they had the pick, but then would Brian Colangelo still have been the GM if Lowry was still here? Like, how different would that be? Would Brian Colangelo use it on Giannis? More than likely not. So, like, there's a lot of things at play. But, like, had that trade gone down and it was about to go down, what would this team be? That's like the wildest thing, because, like, as important as Masai is, Kyle Lowry's been that guy on the floor year in, year out, and the reason why the Raptors are as good as they've been.
Yeah, and, you know,
the Knicks would have been good, which would have been just nasty.
I was gonna say that was also the weird thing, because there's a lot of times where 2013 is not the only time Kyle Lowry's name has come up in trade possibilities, but of course that was the first time and it was the most prominent time. The deal at the time, it has been confirmed that the deal was for Iman Shumpert, better world peace, and a first round pick from the Knicks. And the only reason Knicks turned this deal down, which first off, not a bad deal for the Knicks. Like, I know Iman Shumpert at the time was kind of an exciting prospect. You know, he was doing some things defensively. Was cool, hit some threes.
Isn't it like a Knicks shine though at that point? Like, I feel like we said the same thing about like Landry Fields when he came over, and like the same thing is said about like any Knicks young player.
It was true, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, Iman was a rookie when the Lin Sanity stuff happened. I thought he was like a decent piece of that one, and then the year after that, like, they were a winning team. 2013.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, it wasn't the worst idea. And the Knicks needed a point guard. Like, the Knicks have needed a point guard forever. It wasn't necessarily clear at the time that Kyle Lowry was going to be this, like, future all star, but they needed a point guard. Obviously, Melo, he should have been the all star.
No, it should have been clear to everybody.
Oh, yeah, that too. So, yeah, like, Kyle was about to go to New York for this package, which, I mean, like, again, I guess, you know, you got the first round pick, you know, whatever. Maybe you try to get Wiggins. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they try to get Embiid or something. It would have been unlikely to get that high in the lottery. But
can,
like,
I just say, if Masai was our GM, he was not drafting Wiggins. He was just going to be like, sure? I don't care, Canada, it's Embiid. Like, he was just going to draft. He was not going to draft Wiggins. You think he was going to draft Wiggins? I don't think so.
I mean, I don't know, man.
He would have just pissed off a whole country. We would have loved him.
Yeah, well, seriously, actually. I mean, honestly, like, if Wiggins actually played in Toronto like he always plays in Toronto, then it actually could have been okay.
That's true.
Because he turns into Trace McGrady every time he plays us. But, even with Embiid, I don't even know, to be honest. I kind of rather have this, like, last, like, 7 years of Kyle.
Oh, easily.
Any number of years with Embiid. And easily. I like Embiid a lot. It's just, it's Kyle Lowry.
Easily.
Yeah.
Not trading this for anything. Like, no.
Yeah. So, that year, so Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan take over. DeMar takes, I think, a big step that year in terms of his progression as a scorer. Like, you could really rely on him to get 20 points a game. It wasn't necessarily efficient, but, like, it was still a big jump for him to sort of scale up his volume and sort of create his more offense. And you could tell he was improving as well. And Kyle, though, like, Kyle went from a guy who was a fringe starter, like, maybe, like, a, you know, like 13 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, like just an average stat line, to a guy who, like, was legitimately, in terms of, if you look at the plus minus, if you look at just the raw numbers, like, he really took a leap that year to be an all-star contention. And this is one of those things where I remember at the time, you know, Kyle basically only has like 2 months where he's been really great for the team and he's playing on an all-star level. And, you know, all-star voting came up and the Raptors are one of the top 4 teams in the East at the time. So someone on the Raptors had to go. And they ultimately picked DeMar, and I was pretty happy about it. But I honestly think that, like, Kyle, even that year, deserved it more than DeMar. And it was really disappointing when, like, Joe Johnson made it. Like, remember 7-time All-Star Joe Johnson?
Oh, I was living. I'm still upset. I'm mad at DeMar. I'm mad at Joe Johnson. That was Lowry's All-Star.
It was Lowry.
I think it was Lowry's All-Star. But you know what? It's okay. I'm happy DeMar made it because he's at West now. That's over for him. I'm glad he got that one.
Okay. All right. Well, very big.
That's not shade. That. Like, that's just, he's out West now. And, like, yeah, Joe Johnson's a 7-time All-Star, but, like, Lowry will be next year, too.
Yeah. Oh, wow. There you go.
Calling it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, he's played so well. Like, it's actually kind of nuts that he's still so good. So, yeah, the Raptors go to the playoffs that year, 2014. I mean, first off, what were your thoughts going into the Brooklyn series? Because I said Raptors in 7, but anytime I say Raptors in 7, I really do mean I think the other team's going to win.
Yeah. Yeah, I generally if it goes to, if someone's a 7 and they're a fan of the team,
yep,
they're not being honest. I think I might have been like a Raptors in 6. I think I might have been a Raptors in 6. I think I overlooked the idea of experience.
Yeah.
Like, the Raptors went into it with, like, no guy. Like, I think Amir Johnson had the most experience in playoffs, and he was coming off of the bench for Detroit. Like, was there someone?
Yeah. He was basically like DeJuan Hernandez is now for the Raptors. Like, the Raptors went to the playoffs, I mean, they would have went to the playoffs. Like, that's the level of experience.
Amir had a great game 7, was it? Was it game 7? He had a great, yeah. But Yeah, to me, I think I just overlook the idea of, like, this is a young team and they're just going to get knocked down in their first year.
Yeah.
I just thought the Raptors, it was a toss-up. Like, I knew it was a toss-up, but I was being confident going into it. And I really just thought that the Raptors would win it, but, you know, that's just not how Raptors playoffs go.
Yeah. I mean, in looking
and they
look
good for some games. Like, they had blowouts. Yeah, yeah. Like, they blew them out in a game, and they looked like they were going to blow them out in another game, and that didn't happen.
They won on the road as well. Like, yeah, here's the thing. Like, okay, first off, that Nets team, like, they were super old. They had KG. They had Paul Pierce, Sean Livingston, randomly Andre Blatch, Brook Lopez. What a strange number of players.
And everyone knows I'm like a big a Paul Pierce fan.
Yeah, I can't believe you're willing to admit this, honestly. But yeah, that's I'm always something I'm held against you.
I've always been like a very big Paul Pierce fan. And so when the Raptors were not doing anything in the playoffs, naturally the Celtics were the team that I cared about winning. So like KG, and I know everyone's like, wouldn't you have been the biggest KG fan? But like, I don't pay attention to the Western Conference. I don't care about them. So like, it wasn't like when he was a Timberwolf, I wasn't like, oh, KG. But when he became a Celtic, because I cared about Paul Pierce, I cared about the Celtics core. So when they moved over, including like Jason Terry, when they moved over to Brooklyn, I legitimately like that team, and I thought that they would be good too. So it wasn't like I was discounting them. I just genuinely thought the Raptors were better. But
right, I mean, the Raptors were the younger team. They came in hotter as well. But the thing is that the Nets, like, they had to really scrap to get into the playoffs, and then like they made this very subtle move late in the season where they started going small. And the idea of going small at the time was like, okay, so Brook Lopez will play center, and then like Paul Pierce will play power forward, and it was like this is this amazing thing. And they had Sean Livingston, who actually has, you know, played a part in a lot of small ball lineups.
That's how they were going to beat the Heat.
Yeah, that was supposed to be what happened. And honestly, you know, they didn't even come close. I remember Paul Pierce saying, "I'm the LeBron stopper" or whatever, and it just never worked out for him. But yeah,
Kyle doesn't get that $100 from DeMar.
Oh wow. Who gets $100 from DeMar? I mean, like, we still haven't really seen
something. Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma. Who were the other Laker guys that blocked him from the playoffs last year?
Wow. All right.
He was hurt. I apologize, Lonzo.
Yeah. Wow. I'm happy for Lonzo. He's actually doing okay. He fixed his jumper finally, so that's nice.
Did he?
His percentages look good this year. That's
okay.
You know, am I confident? Am I going to let him take a shot for me on my life on the line? Probably not. But okay, so back to Kyle Lowry. So 2014 in the playoffs, here's the thing. You know, one of the other sort of prevailing storylines that came out was like, you know, in addition to Kyle being a guy who didn't get along with coaches, was it became this whole thing about Kyle Lowry being not good in the playoffs. And it's always a very, it's a point of contention. 2014, it's not fair to apply that Kyle Lowry was bad in the playoffs. Like, look, there is the defining moment from that playoff series was Kyle Lowry getting blocked by Paul Pierce in Game 7 with the chance to advance. Which, by the way, if Kyle Lowry made that shot, what an incredible shot it would have been. But the only things I'll say is that Kyle in that series...
And got blocked by Paul Pierce. I'm sorry, you guys.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry.
Were you happy? What was your reaction? Were you like, yay, or...
That's the thing. Like, when it comes to the Raptors, there's not even a comparison. I don't care about anyone. I was watching that game alone, and I like to watch playoff games alone. I don't want anyone there. I shut the TV off, and I don't think I spoke for like 2 hours. Like, I was just like, I'm not looking at anything. I'm not talking to anyone. I was pissed. I was blocking people on Twitter. I know I was doing that because like people were laughing, and I was like, nope.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing though. It's not fair. Even though Kyle Lowry develops his reputation for not playing well in the playoffs, is like, first off, that 7-game series, Kyle Lowry averages 21 points per game, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. Like, he was by far the best player on the Raptors. He had to shoot a lot for the Raptors. He did so against a team that was way more experienced. They go to 7 games. And on that final play, like, the Raptors literally drew that play up on the wrong side of the floor. So they lined up, and then they gave away what play they were going to run. And then they were like, oh, wait, hold on. The ball's supposed to be on the other side of the floor. So they had to flip it. They had to, like, basically make something out of nothing. And then Kyle actually splits two defenders, but for some reason Paul Pierce is right in the lane. Yeah.
Yeah.
Painful memory. But anyway, look, so Kyle stays on the team. The Raptors stay together. They're like, okay, you know what? This team's not that bad. You know, they add Lou Williams, 2015. They go back to the playoffs. This is where the Kyle Lowry is bad in the playoffs actually happened, because, you know, I cannot defend this performance. The Raptors get swept by the Wizards. And Lowry, I would say, legitimately bad on both ends. He averages 12 points per game on 31% shooting that series. There's a famous clip of Bradley Beal telling Kyle Lowry, "You can't F with me. You can't F with me." That honestly, like, keeps me up at night sometimes. I'll just wake up and remember that the Raptors are great and the Wizards are trash now. But
I hate every single Wizard ever after that series. Like, I'm just like Garrett Temple anytime I watch him. And I'm like,
Garrett Temple.
Otto Porter.
Bro, the things Otto Porter did to DeMar in that series, man. Oh, my God. And of course, Paul Pierce as well, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what were some of your thoughts from the 2015 playoffs?
So that – it started prior to that with like DeMar DeRozan. I think to like that's a season where, as someone who I don't slander DeMar, I love DeMar, but there have often been beef between like, is DeMar the best or is Kyle mm-hmm. the best?
Yeah.
And I think to me that was a season where DeMar's importance was really highlighted.
Yeah.
Where when he got hurt against Dallas and went down, and that Kyle Lowry had to shoulder the brunt of like everything for the team. Mm-hmm. The team was really good. I think they started off 24-6 that year or something crazy. They were a really good team, but it clearly took a toll on Lowry. That's just not something that he's able to sustain for an entire year. Being an older point guard, he's kind of been an older point guard since he started with the Raptors. And it clearly took a toll on his body. And I think like the importance of having a high volume scorer was really showcased that year, where it's like DeMar is very important to this team because it makes sure that Kyle Lowry has legs come playoff.
Mm-hmm.
And so of course he was like dealing with back injuries and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
That was a playoffs I would just like to completely forget. But I'm someone who's going to defend Lowry. I don't know if you watch like cable news, but I'm like, you know how like there's got the people on the right and the people on the left, and they say whatever just to defend their side, even if it's not true. I'm going to do that with Kyle Lowry. So he was injured. It was all injuries.
Yep.
He shouldered too much of the brunt in the regular season because DeMar got hurt and he just couldn't do it come playoffs. His back hurt.
Yeah, and that was also the year Kyle Lowry was a little chubby, which I think was related to
that. Yeah, he lost all that weight the following year. Yeah,
he looked like a newborn baby. Like, it was just like but you know, I think honestly, the weight was a result of the injuries too. Like, it wasn't necessarily a situation where Kyle just let himself go or anything. Kyle that year, and looked this up from Brian Windhorst, who was writing on the series at the time, Kyle Lowry heading into game four had a back injury, a hand injury, a hamstring injury, and a shin injury. Now, I wouldn't say these are any excuses, but like, again, this is just, clearly Kyle was not at his best, whatever. The good thing is that 2016, Kyle Lowry has another like turnaround in his career. And
wasn't that a free agency year though? 2015, right?
He 2015,
they
yeah.
kept him, yeah.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
even with all of that, the Raptors still kept him, so
yeah. And you know, Kyle responds well because he goes on this like huge no, he was a free agent in 2014.
Was it 2014?
Yeah, so he had already resigned. He was that 4-year $48 million deal. But
true.
That summer though, Kyle Lowry, obviously, you know, smarting from the playoffs, he comes back completely revamped. 2015, the summer, I mean, first off, the Raptors made some big moves. They let Lou Williams go because he was legitimately awful in the playoffs, played no defense, and they got in Corey Joseph to play backup point guard instead. They signed DeMarre Carroll, which I actually was thrilled about. I don't know why. Maybe it was because, you know, I was tired of Terrence Rouse playing small forward. I was already out in Terrence at that point. And yeah, I mean, the biggest thing for 2016 though, it was really Kyle Lowry like just revamped his whole body. Oh, and Bismack, yeah.
Yeah, it was Masai being like, okay, we had Gravis, we had Lou, but this offensive thing is not going to work for us. We need guys who play deep. That was like really the change for the Raptors being a defensive team, really.
Right.
We went after Corey Joseph, DeMarre Carroll, and Bismack Biyombo, all three guys known for defense.
Yeah. And also underrated, Masai Ujiri also traded Gravis Vasquez to the Bucks that year to get the picks that became OG Anunoby and Norman Powell. This is just a great memory, man. I'm sure the Bucks fans are thrilled about that decision. Because Gravis Vasquez played like 20 games for the Bucks, and I mean, he was dealing with an ankle injury that kind of ended his career. Or I mean, didn't end his career, but he just like didn't come back into the league after that.
So it ended his career,
yeah. But meanwhile, you know, OG Anunoby and Norman Powell are great players who have also done things against the Bucks. So yeah. Great trade. Anyway, so yeah, Kyle Lowry really turns around that year. The Raptors win 56 games. I remember that year for Kyle was the start of that season. He was skinny. He came out. He was hot. Kyle Lowry's always hot to start the year, too. Like, every start of the season, Kyle Lowry looks like freaking you know,
I remember his first Steph Curry season with here. Defense. He was amazing. Like his first three games here, I was like, this is my favorite player I've ever seen ever. Like I was just like, and that's Kyle's great.
Kyle was great. Yeah. And honestly, at the start of that year, you know, losing the weight over that, it looked like a huge turnaround. It was a huge turnaround. I remember one of the biggest games that year was the Warriors. Remember they got up to that 24-0 start.
Yeah.
One of the times they came closest to losing was to the Raptors. Twice, actually, to the Raptors, you know, close to losing. But Kyle Lowry versus Steph Curry, an all-time battle. Now, the Raptors end up losing that game because Steph is so good, and the Raptors were starting Louis Scola and DeMar Carroll. But Kyle had, like, 41.
We did start Louis. Oh, my God, for, like, a whole year.
We were doing this in the Eastern Conference Finals. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Kyle was amazing that year.
That's honestly, I think, one of just the best games in Raptors history. That was such a fun duel between, like, two guys who just were lights out. And, like, when both of them are on fire, I think the Raptors ended up losing by, like, 3 points.
Yeah,
and Steph, I think Curry ended up scoring just 3 points more than Lowry. And so that was literally the game.
Yep.
And it was just, yeah, phenomenal.
Yeah, but, I mean, it kind of showed to me, like, you know, Kyle could really get to this, like, superstar level, right? And that game, and also the game where the Raptors play against the Cavs, at home in Toronto, and Kyle Lowry hits his step back over Matthew Dellavedova to beat the Cavs. Like, and I think he had like 40 plus in that one as well. Those are the two games, and that season in particular was like, all right, Kyle is here. He's legit. He lost all this weight. Raptors are ready. I think they're second seed in the Eastern Conference that year. And, you know, they go into the playoffs, and you're like, look, this is going to be great. You know, they're playing a team with...
See, I hate those games because it made me believe. It really did, but I was just like, no, they're going to do it. Like, they're good.
Yeah, I mean, look, listen, I was not fearing the Pacers. I didn't care. I was like, this team is very average. You know, Paul George had recovered from his leg injury and stuff like that. But, you know, it just... I just thought the Raptors would definitively have that one. And, like, they struggle. Like, it was a real struggle to get through seven games. Real struggle.
Paul George was a superstar in that series. Like, he was just...
Yeah. Like, it was, like...
We've seen superstars, and that was that. Like, he was just... there was nothing the Raptors could do.
It was, like, not even hyperbole. It was a LeBron-level performance by Paul George. He was, like, just so good. And the Raptors, again, they just... Time and time again, they didn't have this, like, small forward who could defend. And then they got Kawhi and OG. But anyway, so this is at the time when, you know, these guys didn't factor in. And so, you know, the Raptors really struggled. They finally get through Game 7. And this is the series where it really starts to come out that Kyle Lowry is not a playoff performer. That narrative is pushed really heavily. I mean, honestly, like, it was kind of true. Like, he shot 31% against Indiana as well. And this is where you saw Kyle's name start to come up in all these lists of, like, hey, here are the all-time worst field goal percentages by players in NBA history. And, like, literally, the number one was, like, Lou Williams, and the, like, number two was DeMar, and number three was Kyle, and it was like, what are we doing with this team? And it continues even into that Miami series where, you know, Kyle Lowry hits this, like, ridiculous buzzer beater to force overtime in game one, but they end up losing that game. And I think, like, after the game, that's the game where Kyle Lowry was, like, alone in the arena. Right? Yeah, shooting, like, just shots at, like, 2 a.m., on the Raptors court, and some media members came out because they wrote their stories. They came out, they're like, hey, what's that noise? And then, like, they heard Kyle Lowry breaking more shots. If you watch that video, Kyle Lowry misses, like, a fair number of his shots too, which is super sad.
He had an injury then too. Was it the elbow?
He had bursitis. Yeah,
where his elbow was constantly getting drained. I was like, dude, what do you want from him? His elbow's getting drained. Of course, he wasn't making free throws. Like, to me, it was just like everyone was talking about Kyle Lowry being a playoff choker. But when he banged his elbow against Orlando. Mm-hmm. After that game, it might have been twice. I think it was twice against Orlando. If I'm remembering correctly, they went to England and he banged it there against the Magic or some team.
Right.
Wasn't it something like that?
That was the England trip.
And then again in March, I think against Orlando again. If it's not Orlando, it's some team that reminds me of them. He hurt his elbow again there, and that's when he kept having to get it drained. And I'm like, he's not making free throws in a game in March that is not relevant at all. Mm-hmm. Like, to act like this is a playoff choking, like, it's not, that's not what it is. He wasn't hitting his free throws in the regular season either.
Yeah.
So he just, like, in March, there was just a complete drop-off with his shot. And also, like, I feel like people conflate the backcourt And because DeMar DeRozan was struggling with his shot, but Lowry was struggling with his shot more, mm-hmm. and DeMar DeRozan wasn't giving you anything else, it was just like, well, Lowry is the worst one. Like, it's just easier to point to Lowry. And I was like, no, he's actually, like, not shooting well, but doing everything else we need. He's still Lowry.
That's true. But here's the thing, though. Like, there's a big turnaround for him, though. Because, like, okay, first off, the injury was true. Like, it's not even like, oh, he has this, like, muscle tear. You can't really see it or whatever. There's pictures of Kyle Lowry with a freaking garlic bulb on his arm, man. Like, it was massive.
He was getting it drained. Yeah. Like, yeah.
I think there's still kind of like a scar in his elbow. You can kind of still see it sometimes.
Yeah.
At the exact point, I don't know, maybe he had another surgery, but I think that's honestly, you know, related to that. But anyway, Kyle actually, you know, despite all the injuries and stuff, I think he has a big turnaround in that Miami series. Because if you look back at it, first off, Kyle Lowry, game seven against Miami.
Game six, too.
In Toronto. And game six as well. You're right.
Yeah.
Game six and game seven. But he was legitimately phenomenal those two games. Game seven in particular, 35 points to just put, like, just the dagger in that old-ass Miami Heat team that had no business even going seven games with Dwayne Wade and Hassan Whiteside.
The first game seven that the Raptors played, that wasn't a heartbreak. That wasn't like your heart wasn't racing throughout That's all true. Of it, because yeah. the Raptors had just a comfortable lead because it was clear that Lowry was the best player on the court.
Yeah. And he had seven threes. It was amazing. And he even got Mike Breen to say bang at one point. it was important. It was important.
We took our wins.
Listen, this is all we had to cling on to at the time, okay?
We watched Bargnani for like 7 years. Give us something.
Yeah. No, oh my God. Also, a little tiny tidbit for that game seven game. That was the only time DeLon Wright played his brother, Darrell Wright. They both got in at garbage time, I think.
Oh, yeah, they did.
It was real cute. And then Darrell Wright was out of the NBA. Yeah, so it's something. But anyway, but here's the thing. Kyle Lowry in that Miami series, even though he started off really bad and everyone was shitting on him and stuff, he ends the series super strong. He averages 21, 5, 6, and 2.6 steals per game in that series. He shoots 39% from three. Like, pretty damn good.
That's amazing. That's a great series.
Yeah. And then even against the Cavs, like, he was good. Like,
he was good against the Cavs.
Look, the Raptors, look, whatever. Game one, they come out against the Cavs. They lose by, like, 50.
genuinely, from the bottom of my heart, the worst game I've ever watched in my life. I'm still, like, scarred by the idea. I was just, it looked like me and my friends going out against LeBron. Like, it was just, like,
man.
Oh, God.
I think, like, really early in that series, Kyrie throws a lob off the backboard to LeBron for a dunk, and I'm like, well, there's that, and also LeBron driving baseline past Damari Carroll with that reverse dunk, and he like runs backwards while like screaming, trying to get back on defense. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. So they lose by 50, not a big deal. Kyle Lowry was actually good in that series. What anyone said.
He was good. I will say, okay, obviously the Raptors win two of those games, and like the first one, game four to me is one of my favorite games in Raptors history.
Yep.
It was like that fourth quarter, as someone like, yes, defense is fun, but also like offense is fun. Mm-hmm. And just watching the Cavs just run the same play over.
That was like 12 straight possessions running the same play.
And the Raptors just couldn't do anything to stop it. But what they could do was have DeMar and Kyle on the other end match the offense.
Yeah.
And to me, it was just like seeing both of those guys. And I talked about this on Dishes. But seeing both of those guys match up with the best players and the best team in the NBA, that league, was so much fun to watch.
Yeah. It was like, an incredible performance. And also shout out DeMar. He really did step up a little bit.
Yeah, he stepped up. And then even in the last game, like game six, Kyle was it in the third quarter. Like, he made a run that genuinely made me believe the Raptors are going to come back. Like, I was just like, wait, Kyle's doing something.
I don't know if it was just like I was 23 years old and like super emotional or whatever, but like my heart was exploding every single game of that playoff run. a lot because of Kyle. But yeah, I mean, like, he was actually not that bad in this series. I'm just saying. No, like, whatever.
He had a great game six. People forget. Like, that third quarter, go back, watch it, guys. It was legitimately Kyle versus the Cavs.
And then the Cavs beat the Warriors that year. So, like, there's no shame in the Raptors losing six games. Whatever, they lost by 100 points. But, like, Kyle Lowry averaged 24-5 in that series. He shot 47%. Like, he was good.
That's amazing.
He was really good. Whatever, they lost. What do you want? Kyle Lowry to beat LeBron and Kyrie? Like, what do you want? You know what I mean? So, that didn't really work out. And then, you know, after that, honestly, like, it's kind of weird to even really think about Kyle as a guy who was like a bad playoff performer, because it just never happened again. Like 2017, he was legitimately good. He had a really bad game one against the Bucks, and sometimes Kyle has really low lows.
He had two terrible series. Like, the Bucks wasn't great. DeMar was good in that series, right?
DeMar was good in that series. Shout out to that one dunk he had at the end in game six.
When it came down, the Raptors blew like a giant lead or something. Yeah.
They blew like a 27-point lead or something.
Yeah, like I was celebrating and I was like, wait a second. Yeah. What is happening? Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, unlike Giannis, DeMar can actually close a game.
Wait, if I remember correctly, Giannis had like, I think the Bucks needed a three and Giannis had a three and decided to go for the two because he was just like, not taking that. Like, do you remember that? Like, I'm going to try to find the clip and post it on Twitter.
Okay, no, I don't remember that, but that's...
I remember the Bucks needing a three and Giannis had a like wide open three and decided to put the ball on the floor. And it was just
probably
like,
a smarter play. He probably honestly an and one is probably the only way he's getting 3 points.
They needed the three. was not the smarter play.
All I remember was Jason Terry was just killing the Raptors in that game six. And I was like, yo, this is like 40-year-old Jason Terry. He's basically an assistant coach. This would be like if Jamal McGlure came off the floor and put up like a double-double. And I was like, what's going on? So 2017, Kyle was not that bad. 2018, Kyle are legitimately very good against Washington. All right. Like, he outplays John Wall. I mean, John Wall, whatever, he was hurt. He comes back, you know, right before the playoffs start. Well, whatever, Kyle Lowry legitimately outplays John Wall. John Wall's a good player. And he has to guard Bradley Beal as well. Like, Kyle was really good in that Wizards series. And then even against the Cavs, like, yo, this wasn't Kyle's fault, man. Like, Kyle was actually the only one, again, third quarter against the Cavaliers in game three, making this huge push. And whatever, LeBron hits his, like, nutty shot at the end. And that's all I remember.
Is this the OG
remembers.
And Lowry series?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kyle was good in that series, too.
Kyle was really good in that series.
Yeah.
So, it was not on Kyle. It was not on OG. It was on everybody. I mean, his name starts with a J, but we're not going to say it.
Wow. Wow.
Tip in.
Yeah. What were your thoughts watching game one?
It, like, I get very nervous about Raptor games. Like, I just get incredibly nervous. And It felt like a stutter. Just like, you know, like you want to get something out, but it just won't. Like, that's how the tip-ins felt. We're just like, why can't it just go down? Like, what is happening?
Yo, and JV's money. Like, JV's actually a great finisher. He's got great touch. This is not like Biz.
This is not Biz. Yeah, this is not Biz.
JV's good. Yeah, incredibly.
And then after that, it was just like, well, this is the, like, I just felt no hope. Just like,
yeah. No, but it's interesting. The context matters here because, like, everyone thinks back. It's like, oh, LeBron versus the Raptors. Like, of course they lost. But, like, the Cavs needed 7 games to get past Bojan Bogdanovic's Pacers.
Doesn't belong to Depot?
No, Bojan was amazing that series. Depot had some moments. Old Depot had some moments. But I remember people watching that game and people were like, I don't care. The Raptors are the number one seed. We're really good. We're going to beat this Cavs team. We, you know, like, I don't care if it's Indiana or LeBron. Like, it doesn't matter to me. We'll beat anybody. And I'm like, no. I'm praying it's Indiana. Please, Indiana, come through. LeBron comes through, and then, yeah, that series. But honestly, Kyle was not that bad in that series.
No, he was good.
It was, again, it was just, unfortunately, DeMar gets, you know, just basically played out of relevance in that playoff context. Like, there was so much three-point shooting happening. He couldn't really get enough scoring. I mean, like, and then, you know, he gets benched in game three. They make the comeback. They fall short. And then game four, he gets ejected for hitting Jordan Clarkson.
So, like, literally the last two games he's played as a Raptors, as a Raptor, has just had him kicked out before the game ended.
Yeah, that's, like, super sad to me, to be honest, because DeMar deserved a better exit than that. But, you know, I don't put this
that
on Kyle.
Cavs team
I really
was
don't.
Not good. Like, they were, like, I've been seeing tweets. I don't know if you've seen it, but, like, oh, if the Cavs, there was someone who said, if the Cavs were still there, like, last year when the Raptors were going, the Raptors would have lost to them again. What? I was like, the Cavs needed 7 games.
No,
to beat anyone who was not the Raptors that year.
Wow. Like, okay, that's a wild assertion.
Yeah. People are crazy.
So this is 2018, Kyle Lowry's, you know, whatever. I think at this point, the reputation for Kyle is just what it is. Like, people are like, look, he's been a positive factor in the playoffs, but, you know, people. There's also just a lot of people that shit on him. Yeah, that's just what it is. And so really 2019 was like the big turning point, because even though I thought in terms of just his performance, Kyle, his numbers aren't as high. He only averaged 15 points per game last year in the playoffs. Obviously comes out with that zero against Orlando, which still seems hilarious.
Plus 11.
He was a plus 11, a team high plus 11. You always got to go to plus minus to defend the loss to the Wizards.
You got to find what Magic. You got to find the angles.
And that's why we have you on, because you know not a lot of people will bring him. He was plus 11.
He had 7 screen assists. No, I'm kidding.
Wow. He had half a Gobert double double. Get well, Gobert. I think he's actually okay now, so we can go back to making fun of Rudy. But yeah, Kyle Lowry, you only average 15 points per game. But this is the thing. He's the third option. And, you know, he has to really settle into this role. And honestly, like, it's funny now that, like, the reputation is really flipped, because I think really it boils down to one thing. I mean, obviously they win the championship, but it really boils down to game 6, right? We can skip all the other moments. And Kyle had a lot of great moments throughout the playoffs. But it boiled down to game 6 on the road against Golden State. Kyle Lowry comes out, scores 11 straight points. And the Raptors take that energy. They propel it throughout the entire game. And, you know, it wasn't Kyle necessarily making a lot of plays in the fourth quarter. It was a lot more Fred VanVleet. And, of course, you know, Pascal makes a layup at the end there. And Kawhi wins that, you know. Well, I guess he doesn't really win the loose ball. But, I mean, Draymond, he ties up Draymond. Draymond calls, you know, commits a tech, whatever. But, yeah, I think Kyle Lowry, 26 points, what, 7 rebounds, 11 assists. 12 assists. Don't want a short call.
Yeah. I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast because someone told me to, and he talked about that being like, and you know, say what you want about his podcast, he like kind of dictates what he says, kind of dictates a lot of, or at least what he's saying, you know, that a lot of other people are saying, it dictates a lot of like the NBA talk, the discourse that happens. And he talked about that game changing his entire legacy, like changing Lowry's legacy, and that being the defining moment. And we can talk about the Wizards series kind of being the talk, despite everything that Lowry's done in the playoffs, he wasn't able to shake the Wizards series. Mm-hmm. Well, that game 6 did it. Like, that is the final, like, having the ring is that Trump moment. It is the thing that beats out everything else. It's the game that erases all the talk about his playoff failures prior to that.
Yeah. And I'm so happy you got to have that moment, because right before that, the last gasp of Kyle Lowry as a bad playoff performer was Kyle Lowry at the end of game 5. The Raptors run a play. They're down. I think they're down 1. I forget what the final score was, but they're down in game 5. They have the final possession. They run the play. Kawhi. The play was supposed to be, obviously, Kawhi, take the shot if you see a shot. But Kyle Lowry was supposed to be spotting up in the corner with Marc Gasol screening Draymond as a pin down to get Kyle open. And Kawhi swings the ball over, and somehow Draymond gets a fingertip on the ball to block it. And Draymond avoids Mark's screen, which is not easy. Mark sets pretty big screens. But just imagine, like, first off, if Kyle Lowry hit that game 5 game winner, like, if we're talking about like a end the series type of dagger. I don't think, I mean, like, basically other than MJ, like, how many other,
the greatest shot in NBA history at that point,
like, it'd be amazing.
Outside of the MJ winner, like, what is there? The shot, literally, it's called the shot.
It
would have been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It would have, but I think game 6 needed to happen, and he like dispelled everything that happened prior to that. But yeah, he had the chance, and very similar to like we talked about like the first playoff game that the first playoff series the Raptors had, and Paul Pierce blocking his shot, and then we have game 5, and you have Draymond Green blocking his shot.
Yeah,
but luckily it didn't end that way.
Yeah, shout out Kyle, man. So at this point, you know, Kyle Lowry gets the playoff choker label off of him. And so at this point, you know, like, Kyle can just kind of mellow out, you know, everyone's kind of, you know, where they're at. Like, if you still hate on Kyle Lowry and people still do it, they're like, oh man, he's taking charges in an all-star game. It's like, whatever. At this point, we can all realize that that's ridiculous. Like, he's an NBA champion. And I'm very happy that you can get to this clarity. But and looking back at Kyle Lowry's career, though, he's had a lot of, like, prominent relationships in which he sort of not necessarily defined his career, but it's just important players that have come into his life. I think the number one thing that I've always found very interesting is that connection between Masai and Kyle. Because, you know, I don't necessarily think it's necessarily all love, because a lot of it, honestly, was, you know, Masai as a GM basically saying to Kyle, like, yo, first off, we already talked about this earlier, but him telling Kyle to shape up, telling him, do you want to be a $3 million player, a $2 million player, a minimum player, or like a double digit million player? Like, what, it's your choice. That was a great speech. But honestly, like, you know, Masai was willing to trade Kyle in 2013. That was the Knicks saying no. That was not Masai saying no. And, you know, this is, it's just kind of an awkward situation because, you know, 2019, after the DeMar trade, that got really awkward for Masai and Kyle too, because, you know, if you remember the reports at the time, Larry was dodging calls and, you know, texts from team, you know, officials, including Masai as well. And there was that interview that, remember, the ESPN came to Toronto for an all-access game, Raptors Bucks, December 5th. And they sat down with Kyle. Rachel Nichols, you know, she's very good at these interviews where she gets players to say, you know, sassy things. But Kyle, you know, said, like, yo, Masai is the he's the president, I'm the player. That's the relationship. And it got real awkward, you know?
Hasn't he said something similar about Casey? Like, he's the coach, I'm the player. Like, yeah. It's very much like Kyle talk for I don't like him.
Yeah, Kyle's quote on Dwayne Casey was, if he's the coach, then I'm a player.
Okay.
Yikes.
I don't know what that means, Kyle.
Yeah. And this Masai thing is all, I don't know. It's interesting because I think it has a happy ending, and that's why I think it's interesting to me. But, you know, throughout the journey, that same ESPN, you know, all access sit down. So they get this quote out of Kyle. Then, of course, they go talk to Masai and they ask Masai about his comment about, like, hey, you know, Kyle said this about you. Like, is things okay between you two? And Masai, being as straight up as he is, he's just like, quote, Kyle Lowry's always mad at me. Every year, he's always mad at me. It's been like that with Kyle since I came here. I don't know how Kyle is. I love him to death. He plays basketball the right way. He gives it his all. I'm used to it. And I know he has a good heart. And I know I haven't done anything wrong to him. I didn't even trade him. So.
Didn't even trade you.
Shout out Masai for being that much of a savage and just being like, yo, listen. I'm still your boss, okay? Like, you're damn right I'm the president.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. And of course, this has a happy ending because, like, at the end of it all, you know, game six, they win the championship and everyone is celebrating. And of course, this is the super unfortunate part of it is that Masai gets profiled on his way, literally winning the championship. Masai Ujiri gets profiled by this cop who turns out to be this, like, huge scammer and things like that. And it's the criminal charges have already been dismissed. But yeah, he gets held up and there's, like, apparently a shoving match between Masai and this cop. And of all people, it's Kyle Lowry who spots Masai in the crowd, goes over, grabs him, and brings him onto the floor. And obviously, it's a traumatic moment for Masai, and it's super unfortunate that it happened to him. But for Kyle Lowry to be the one looking out for Masai at that point and bring him in is, I don't know. It's just, it's Kyle Lowry, you know? Like, he's considerate. Who would even think about that? You won the NBA championship. You should be just thinking about yourself and how much good things happened to you and how's, you know? Kyle Lowry.
He did that when Kawhi hit the shot. Like, he made sure to go after the ball to get it to him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think he did that for an OG game as well. Like, I think when, was it Siakam's season, like, career high? Was it OG? Like, I don't know, but he just, like, continuously does that where he keeps in mind, like, this is a monumental moment for this person and I want to make sure it's special for them as well. And, yeah, like, I remember a pod that he did after winning it where he said he responded to every single text message he received of, like, someone congratulating him. And I'm like, this is the most thoughtful. Like, I don't think I would have even, like, I would just be like, thanks. Like, group, I don't even know. But, like, he's just clearly a very thoughtful person. Better than I am.
Yeah. And, like, you know, it's the Masai and Kyle angle is, I don't know. It's just, it's interesting. I think it really just speaks to their personalities, right? Like, Masai is a very competitive guy. Masai is very Kyle Lowry-esque, I think, in a way. You know, like, he's willing to come in, he's willing to, you know, be in your face. He's willing to be the underdog. He's willing to make whatever moves. And he's a guy who's just, like, driven to win. And I think, you know, that's probably what ultimately kept these two together. Because there's honestly a lot of forces that could have pushed them apart.
Yeah, for sure. I'm so glad they were able to win together. Because those are literally, like, the two greatest anythings in franchise history, and they were able to put it together and win here.
Yeah,
thanks Brian Colangelo for bringing both of them to us.
I was gonna say, yeah, you know, this is Brian Colangelo's team after all.
Yeah.
Well, when I do the Masai pod, that's gonna be the narrative I really kill.
Do we have a European on our team?
Yeah, Mark, baby.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. This is Brian Colangelo. Yeah. What are you, a Spanish player at go. That?
We glowed up, man. We went from, what was it called? We went from Maurizio Gherardini or to Jose to this. Actually, no, Jorge Garbajosa as well. Shout out, Jorge. I like
that. Oh, shout outs to Jorge.
Yes, it's a damn
greatest
shame.
Warrior number 15? Greatest Warrior number 15?
You know,
Jorge Garbajosa?
Amir Johnson gets a lot of love there, I think.
Yeah, you know? That's true.
Yeah,
that's
he had true. A longevity. Yeah.
Amir is my favorite. Yeah, that's fair.
Anthony Bennett?
No. I'm not giving you that.
Remember when the Raptors had Anthony Bennett and he was wearing number 15?
Disrespectful.
Yo, seriously, retire Vince's jersey already, man. This is, we can't have this happen.
Disrespectful. Just like Quincy Acey coming in and wearing number 4. Like, that's just not fair.
Yeah, yeah. Like what? I forgot about that. Wow. Damn.
We just can't be doing these things.
Yeah, you're right. We gotta just.
Gotta anyway. Retire 15 for Amir Johnson once and for all.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. He's, you know, the franchise leader in win shares for 48 minutes.
Is he?
He's not, no. But he, that was always
I
one.
I believe that right away. I'm like, yep.
One of the stats he was always good at. Obviously, the other relationship that really defines a lot of, you know, Kyle's career, especially with the Raptors, is him and DeMar. I think this story's also been told a couple of times, but at first, you know, when they became teammates, like, it's not like they were friends from the start. Like, apparently they barely even spoke that first season together. And, you know, to go from that to becoming best friends where, you know, like DeMar even said, like he said, I think during this like recent IG call with Serge, he's like, yo, I call Kyle like 5 times on his birthday. You know yeah. what I mean? Like they're like legit best friends. Like, well, what are some of your favorite like DeMar and Kyle like memories? Because there's so many to pick from, obviously.
There's so many. There's like one where you just hear DeMar's laugh is the best thing. So anytime yeah. you can just get a DeMar just like cackle in a video, it's great. Of course, like the math thing, you know, USC.
Yeah.
That was always good. There's so like any of the videos that they did, like I think the Raptors were really good, and like Raptors like PR staff was really good at getting both of them in videos together.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it was always just gold. Do you have any at the top of your head?
So many. Kyle Lowry on Cabby Presents drawing himself. Yeah. If you haven't seen it already, that one is amazing. So it's an incredible self-portrait.
If you told me Carter did that or like Cameron, I'd be like, seems a little young for them. Like, yeah, like, wow. You sure?
A lot of potential here. I think that interview that you're talking about where, you know, DeMar's laughing a lot, but Kyle decides to crash DeMar's, I think, shoot-around scrum where he's sitting courtside.
Yeah, it seemed like, yeah.
He brings like a glass bottle like this and he just like pretends it's a mic. And then... And then, yeah, they had this exchange where, you know, something like DeMar says, like, yo, at least I can get my shot off. And then Kyle's like, yeah, after 47 pump fakes.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. That was good. Also, like, is it Ford? Is it Ford who the Raptors partner with where they do, mm-hmm. like, those in the car things?
Yeah, yeah.
Those are always good with the two of them. Those are always funny on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's always – I found it to be very weird. Like, they play weird games, like – can you throw a steering wheel into a basketball net? But look, it worked. The content worked. I don't know what to
it's
say.
Great content. Yeah. Like if you're in quarantine and you're bored, you should go check those videos out.
Yeah, seriously. There's lots. There's like huge like compilations of these two being friends. And
yeah.
Like, it's real adorable. Like, you know, they go, you know, the one thing I wish that Kyle and DeMar had was like a huge like playoff moment together.
Yeah.
It always felt like one or the other was going. You know what
yeah.
I mean? And
that's why that Cavs game 4 kind of just felt like,
yeah,
oh, we have both
yeah.
of them on, you know? But that was a game. They didn't win the series, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. They didn't get to really celebrate together. The only time they really got to celebrate together was in the Rio 2016 Olympics, where because a lot of these players dropped out, Kyle made the team and DeMar made the team. More so for DeMar than for Kyle. I think Kyle was going to make the team regardless. You know, I think Gordon Hayward, a whole bunch of forwards dropped out, Harden. So like, okay, so DeMar goes along with Harrison Barnes randomly. What was going on? Why did TVSA bring Harrison Barnes?
What a strange team.
Yeah. And that was the summer where I'm pretty sure it was like 2016. So that was the year Harrison Barnes shoots like he bricks like 30 straight shots for the Warriors that year when they were trying to lost the Cavs in the playoffs. But
jeez. So they went from playing with Terrence Ross in the regular season to Harrison Barnes in the summer?
Yeah. It's unfortunate, you know. DeMar, Kawhi was a blessing in that front. But yeah, I mean, like, they got to win a gold medal together. That was really awesome. You know, it's obviously a big achievement for them. Kyle was actually a pretty prominent player for that team, too. It was like Kyrie, I think, was a starter. But Kyrie was sort of hit or miss, and sometimes when he wasn't scoring, like, it just, like, the effect wasn't there. So Kyle was, like, in that circumstance, a perfect backup point guard, because he was going to come in, make plays, actually pass the ball. You know what I mean? Not a lot of, like, superstars are passing the ball in that setting. So
yeah,
that was actually really important in the in Team USA winning the gold medal together. But
yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, the trade happens. And, you know, it was real awkward, too, because that was probably the time where Kyle was maybe most at odds with the franchise. But I in looking back, I think it was really just a sign of loyalty. You know what I mean? Like, imagine if at your workplace, like, you know, one of your literally your best friend gets laid off for not a good reason. Like, you'd be pretty pissed at the company.
Yeah. Yeah. And not like, yeah, someone who has dedicated everything to the franchise, like someone who has got loyalty tatted on his hand, someone who, like, Lowry was the best player on the Raptors, and but DeMar DeRozan was the Raptors, right? Yes. Like, he was not just, like, the face of the team, but he wore that. Whereas, like, Lowry was just like, you're the coach, I'm the player, you're the president, I'm, like, he just, like, was like, I'm clocking in, I'm clocking out. Whereas, like, for DeMar DeRozan, this team meant so much to him, and I think, like, the significance of that was not lost on Lowry. So seeing, you know, DeMar being hurt by that, especially because you get to see how hurt your friend is by it, of course that would make anyone upset.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, honestly, like, they get over it, you know what I mean? They get over it. And that's one of those things where, for Kyle and Masai, going back to that relationship, like, there was that famous sit-down in 2019, last year, like, before the trade deadline, you know, Masai sits down with Kyle. And they're like, look, let's just hash things out, man. Like, it's been frosty between us. Like, you know, like, we're all in to win the championship. We're about to go trade for Marc Gasol to complete this puzzle. We have Kawhi Leonard. He's probably only going to be here for 1 year. Like, let's try to make the best of it. And the two of them have, like, a real sit down and have a talk. And that's really where I think, you know, really the hatchet was buried between any hurt feelings from the DeMar trade and stuff like that. So
yeah. Because I think even as, like, the star of the team, to also kind of feel blindsided by it as well, to feel like you feel like there is more of that distance where it's like, I'm the player, you're the yada yada. And I think, like, calling him in and having that conversation is something that would have eased it for anyone, where you want to kind of feel like, I'm the star of this team, let me be in the know of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, like, you know, there was, I mean, whatever. It's hard going back to that DeMar trade, but, like.
Yeah, me too. You know, I wish, like, we couldn't. Like, I wish we didn't have to trade him, but unfortunately.
Yeah. And, you know, everything worked out. Everyone's okay with it now. Like, apparently, and this just speaks to how good of a person DeMar is. Like, apparently last year, you know, DeMar walked into the locker room and gave Masai a big hug from behind.
Oh, my God. I'm going to cry.
You know
what I
mean? And it's just one of those, like, you know, like, is there, you know, it's just. It's whatever, it happened, and you know, but
he was just on Siakam's live yesterday.
Yeah. And yeah, shout out, you know, DeMar was like, he said Kyle Lowry's the greatest, you know, Raptor of all time, period. He said he picked Pascal for most improved player. You know, like, he keeps in touch with all the guys. So just a great dude.
DeMar. Yeah.
Yeah. We had DeMar, so Kawhi could hit the shot.
I love a championship more, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, well, it is what it is, you know. So yeah, that's Kyle Lowry. And really, you know, the only other things I really want to focus on were just sort of, like, you know, his style of play. I feel like something, this is where with Kyle, where you just don't see a lot of star players that excel at doing the little things, and that's what makes them a star player. And that's very much where Kyle is, you know what I mean? Like, do you remember another star player who makes a star level impact that has a game that is quote unquote as ugly as Kyle's?
I think it's different because of, like, the size difference, but I think, like, just the hardness with which, like, a Jimmy Butler plays, or just, like, because Chris Paul is both undersized and, like, needs every sort of extra advantage. The smarts with which a Chris Paul plays, I think, is, like, similar to what Lowry brings.
Also, they both have this, like, maniacal competitiveness.
Yeah.
Like, they'll do things like crawl under George Hill's legs for a foul.
Nutmeg you with your own body. Like, what is that at that point?
After the game, apparently Kyle was still complaining, like, yo, I don't know a rule that says I can't do that. Kyle, man, what's wrong with you?
Oh god. How do people not love that man?
That was hilarious, man. George Hill was just like, bro, I'm just standing here like, why'd you do this to me?
So good. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right though. There's just like, you know, like it's just like a really physical dude, and like he just really wants to win, and he's really smart. He makes so many great plays, and you know, I mean, Kyle has said it himself, you know what I mean? Like, he said this multiple times where, you know, quote, why not just go out there and play your butt off every night? Just give it your all. You can't worry if you look cool playing basketball. A cool basketball player is a garbage basketball player. Tony Parker ain't cool. Or the most smoothest guy. Tony gets it done. Tim Duncan ain't. Manu Ginobili's pretty cool. But he plays as hard as hell by being cool. He ain't cool on purpose. He just got a cool game. So
Manu's super cool. That sounds like something Jimmy Butler would say.
Yeah, it is.
Like, it's very much cut from, like, the same cloth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I mean, if Kyle doesn't end up getting into the Hall of Fame, and this is something where, you know, we can talk about as well, but it's probably just going to be that his game doesn't look that good. Because he took these numbers, and you take his resume, which has an All-NBA team on it, has a gold medal.
Should have multiple All-NBA teams on it.
Honestly, I think he should win 13 All-NBA this year. He's been that good.
Yeah, I think so too.
So like multiple, like, I mean, hopefully multiple, but we'll see. I'd say he's 50-50 this year. That player X would be a Hall of Famer, but I think it's just honestly because Kyle Lowry's game is like taking charges and taking transition pull-up threes and like getting, you know, his shoulder past the guy and drawing a foul on his way to the rim. And like making hit ahead passes, like people are like, "All right, this is not an all star. We're describing a good Marcus Smart game." You know what I mean? Like, but look, Kyle Lowry's impacted winning. You know, that's my Hall of Fame case. Is Kyle Lowry's impacted winning
at the highest level? Like, I think the way that I see it is the Raptors have been the winningest team in the Eastern Conference in the last 7 years,
mm-hmm.
and to not. Think that the like if you had taken the any team in the West or any other team in the East, if it wasn't the Raptors, you would say, oh, they've been the best team in the last 7 years or had the best record in the last 7 years. Their best player is without a doubt a superstar, or like without a doubt an All-NBA, you know, Hall of Fame level player. If he was able to sustain that for that long, win a championship, win a gold medal, make six, possibly more, I'm hoping, for All-Stars, that to me is a Hall of Fame career. And it feels like the Raptors are not going to get that because although, you know, hate for the playoffs and, like, you know, went to Lowry and blame for the playoffs, I should say, went to Lowry, success for the team did not go to him for whatever reason in the regular season.
Yeah. And that's super awkward. I don't know why that is. I don't know why there's an agenda. Because
his game, it really is a style of game. Like, DeMar DeRozan, I know that, like, analytics, Twitter, the idea of a DeMar DeRozan type of game is not what people like, and it might not be aesthetically pleasing in that way. But DeMar DeRozan is aesthetically pleasing to watch. When he's on, the amount, like, the shots that he hits, the level of difficulty, and just being a high-volume scorer and seeing – this is the 20 points per game guy versus this is the 16 points per game guy. Well, then who's the best player is how I think most people look at it. And unfortunately, that's not been the case with the Raptors.
Yeah, that's true. But Kyle Lowry should be in the Hall of Fame.
Kyle Lowry should be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Like, just the success that he's had, I don't think we would look at any other stretch in NBA history where one team has – without a doubt, just been at the top of their conference year in and year out for nearly a decade and said that the best player on that team, outside of 1 year with Kawhi Leonard being the best player, because, like, even though Siakam was the best player, I think Lowry was the most important player this year for the team.
Yeah. I think so. No, I agree.
And so any other stretch of basketball where you can look at a team's history and say that for them, their best player is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, there you go. So to close the pod, which is, you know, I don't want to be honest, because I love talking about Kyle Lowry, but
I just Kyle Lowry stories, insomnia runs with Kawhi.
I was gonna say, yeah, let's just fire off like Kyle Lowry stories and Kyle Lowry quotes, because there's a lot of them to get to be honest.
You go first.
Okay, so this is you know, Kyle Lowry's hard-headed, you know, we all know this. Again, we don't have to revisit, but he literally crawled on their man's legs. And you know, he says he gets this sort of like hard-headed quality from his grandmother, Shirley Holloway, who raised Kyle along with his mom Marie, who you see on Twitter all the time. Shout out Marie, she's really active on Twitter.
Yeah, no, I love her.
But yeah,
we have the same role on Twitter, both of us. It's just liking and retweeting Lowry love. I'm gonna do it anytime I see it. Marie's gonna do it anytime she sees it, and that's true. It's great.
Yeah, you guys are basically family at this point. Lowry said about his grandma, quote, about everything. You know, don't walk down the stairs like that. Don't cook grits like that. On Sundays, don't think about coming near the kitchen until she was done cleaning. Like, everybody get out of my damn way or I'm not cooking breakfast, Lowry says. And you don't get breakfast when she's cleaning. How I am, that's straight from my grandma. Which, like, you know, honestly, if you think about it, Kyle Lowry is really like a hard-headed grandma. He's a super stubborn guy, like sometimes doesn't listen to reason, will do things that are really old school and weird, but he just gets
I don't think done. Running under a guy's legs is old school.
I don't know,
think
man.
That's new school. I think he's just ahead of the curve.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
that's the future of the
he's
NBA.
A visionary. They're gonna start doing that in the future. You're gonna see
future of the NBA is like Spud Webb types, just like dribbling under people's legs.
Why not? If they're gonna be giants, they're gonna be regular people who can like fit right under them.
Yeah
That was great.
Yeah, another cool Kyle Lowry story. This one I really loved. A former teammate told Kyle Lowry he would never make more than $5 million a year. You know who this teammate was?
I do, but Jared Jeffries?
Jared Jeffries, man. Bro, who is Jared Jeffries ever to tell anybody else? You can't make $5 million, man.
Is that the most that Jared Jeffries has made?
I don't know. He played for the Knicks, so he probably earned a.
Yeah, he probably made some money.
Didn't really.
Honestly, I remember Jared Jeffries most from a fight that like didn't quite happen. Do you remember
which
that?
One? Was it the Melo fight?
Yeah.
He tried to fight someone during that stretch?
No, he was just a part of it. Like that's just like my highlight of like if you say Jared Jeffries, my brain just flashes to that one fight that happened, and that's it.
All I remember from that fight is Melo threw that one punch and then just like backpedaled the whole way down the floor. Like it was like a fast break in game seven of the playoffs. Like
yeah.
You recovered so fast on defense. I was like, why can't you do this all the time?
Why can't you do this regularly? D'Antoni just showing him game film? Like this is what we want, Melo. Yeah.
One thing I also like about Kyle is that he's always been willing to defer to other players.
Yeah.
You know, like he propped up DeMar so much. And supported him every step of the way.
Yeah, I think those are my favorite Lowry memories when you were saying. I think it's just the celebration of DeMar. Like, anytime DeMar hit a big shot, had a big dunk, like, just the joy on Lowry's face matched DeMar's.
Yeah. That dunk DeMar had against Detroit where he ended Anthony Tolliver's life.
R.I.P.
And then Kyle's just, like, jumping up and down like a madman.
That's not how DeMar. You celebrate. That's a funeral, Lowry. Show some respect.
I was gonna say,
I really wanted
Anthony Tolliver on the Raptors for a while. I don't know why, because I was like, this is the closest thing to Patrick Patterson. Like, maybe we should get another one. And
there was a time where I wanted John Salmons on the Raptors. Okay, things happen.
He was good. He had some moments.
Not as a Raptor.
When he was good, God also told him, "Don't come to Toronto.
Don't go to the Raptors." I was like, "Well, he spurned us. I don't want him now."
Like, what? You know, imagine Twitter was around in like 2006 when that happened. And Woj is just like, God told John Salmons not to sign to Toronto. Leak sources tell, you know, Yahoo Sports at the time.
13-year-old me would have had Twitter fingers for John Salmons at that time. Tell you that.
Was AOL just blowing up? Like, I don't know, man. MSN Messenger was just popping off with like, yo, F
John Salmons. Everyone was changing their status.
Yeah, seriously. I hate John Salmons. Signed in. Online, but don't talk to me.
DeMar really does defer. That's a great point.
Yeah, Kyle is just like, he's just always been a guy who's been willing to do that. You know, he's not possessive about these things. Like look at Pascal coming up. Like Kyle Lowry immediately says, like, you know what? This is the guy. We're going to make him as good of a player as he can. When Kawhi came, obviously he's Kawhi, so it doesn't seem like that big of a deal at the time. But, like, you know, just the Raptors had just traded DeMar DeRozan. You know, it's a painful time for Kyle Lowry. And you got this new guy coming in, Kawhi and Kyle. You know, they became good friends, but like at the time, they didn't know each other and stuff like that. Apparently, immediately upon arriving in Toronto, you know, they have this conversation, and Kyle tells him, like, you know what, this is your team. Like when Leonard arrived in training camp, Lowry told him the Raptors were his team, and it was just like never a question of that from the jump. And you know, Kyle Lowry even backed it up because like at the start of last year, you remember, he led the league in assists for like the whole year until Westbrook, yeah. you know, ball hogged his way into the lead, whatever. But yeah.
Westbrook rondoed it up. But I think that's like part of why Lowry's so good is winning comes before everything. Mm-hmm. And when he came in to the Raptors, there was all this talk about him being stubborn and like, you know, putting him like being a selfish player in a sense. And like
yeah.
Lowry's been the complete opposite of that, where he will. And we saw it last year with Kawhi, where if Kawhi Leonard is playing, Lowry's taking a back seat. Lowry's biggest games and best games came when Kawhi sat. And I think for a long time, a lot of us thought, can he not do it? Like, does he maybe not have legs? And this year proved, no, he does. Mm-hmm. He was just taking a back seat to Kawhi Leonard because Kyle understands his own limitations, and that's why he does everything. That's why he takes the charges that he takes. That's why he takes the 2-for-1s. That's why he doesn't pick up the ball until it rolls. Like, he understands everything is a math game, and he has to make the most of every single possession. I think he understands his own physical limitations and deferring to a DeMar DeRozan, a Pascal Siakam, a Kawhi Leonard every single year, because that's what's going to affect winning. Mm-hmm. In the same way that like taking a charge right now is going to affect winning. I think that's just the way he sees everything, and that's what makes him so special, and that's the reason why the Raptors have been as good as they've been.
Yeah, for sure. One of my other things, favorite things about Kyle, super nurturing guy, it seems like. First off, I mean, like, you know, he has two kids, they're always around the locker rooms and stuff like that. He involves them, he brings them to All-Star weekend and stuff like that. Like, he's just really adorable with that, you know what I mean? And shout out to him for, you know, just being a really great dad. But
yeah,
it's just like, even in other aspects of the game, like how many, like, he really reps for Villanova. Like, he really you know, lends support to anybody who's come out of Villanova. Villanova's had like a really big surge of late. Like, they've had a lot of players to enter the league, not necessarily star players, but like real solid Kyle Lowry types, like Jalen Brunson or like a Dante DiVincenzo, Josh Hart,
your guy,
my guy,
the other Josh Hart,
my call-in host. You know, like, it's just, you know, there's been a couple of them of late that have really come in. But Kyle's really, definitely, even Ryan Archie Diacono, like, it's just, you know, Kyle's really been a supportive guy for those guys. And Kyle also on the Raptors has been a really supportive guy. Like, look at him taking Fred under his wing and just giving him so much game to the point where Fred can really accelerate his development and become a player now where he can be a starting level, you know, guard for a playoff team, which I know you despise, but it's okay.
I don't despise. I love Fred. He's definitely taken up under Lowry, and I love any player that's of the same ilk as Kyle Lowry. I just don't think he's better than Lowry. That's it.
No, he's not better than Lowry.
That's all the take. And I think Norman Powell is a better starter than he is. That's it.
Okay, wow. Wow. I wish we had these conversations instead of talking with no basketball.
Oh, man. Right, yeah, hopefully it's back. But
yeah.
Everyone stay inside.
Stay inside, people. Wash your hands. What did Kyle Lowry say? He tweeted out a picture of the parade and was like, look, this is fun, but like, don't come close to me right now.
Basically. Let's hope we can have that sometime again in the future. And the sooner you guys follow rules, the sooner we can get back to normal.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's Kyle Lowry. You don't have any more Kyle Lowry stories? Come on, man. Yeah.
I mean, I do. Oh, I'm like blank. Yeah. I feel like I'm blanking. And as soon as this call is going to be over, I'm going to be like, this Kyle Lowry thing. Do you remember when this happened?
Uh-huh.
I think the McDonald's run with DeMar.
Yeah, that was
something
hilarious
that popped up in my head, which was always really funny. I think just like him changing his body, honestly, it just felt like was such a huge turn for the Raptors in a lot of ways. Like, I don't know. There's so many. I'm probably forgetting all of them. I can't think of one. Yeah. And it's like ridiculous because I'm just going to start you know what? Follow me later. I'm probably going to tweet every single story that I forgot right now because I'm going to be annoyed with myself. So,
yeah. Also, shout out for Kyle for being like so tough. You know what I mean? Like, the play through all these injuries is just like last year during the finals round, like, he literally, and especially that Milwaukee series, like, he was getting injections every single day on game day on his hand just so he can play the game. Like, remember, his thumb was really messed up. He suffered that injury. Game 7 against the Sixers, he had to leave briefly, and he came back to that game. I made a whole bunch of different plays. Wrestled Ben Simmons. And then, he played the whole playoffs with just a really banged-up thumb, and it finally required surgery and stuff like that.
And he won, like, I think, like, my favorite moments of Lowry are just when he just doesn't want to give up. And it just like situations like that where like your body, like we're all just like, what are you doing? But he just like has this determination. And it comes sometimes in games where I can think of like a couple of Utah games for whatever reason, it always happens against the Jazz, but he always kind of comes up big, or he'll like have those moments. It also happened in the finals where we saw it happen in game one against the Bucks, but of course nobody else there was there to pick up slack. The game six against the Cavs that we were talking about, like there are these moments where Lowry's just like, if you guys aren't gonna do it, if it, I will, and he'll go for it. And I think that's always the funnest. It's the Chloe moments.
30 point comeback, man.
The Dallas, like,
that's exactly it. Like, literally,
regardless of who you put on the court with Lowry, it's just gonna happen.
You guys are bums. We're down 85-55 against Dwight Powell because, you know, Luka Doncic wasn't even in the game. And Kyle Lowry is like, you know what? Screw it. We're still gonna win this game. Watch, I'm gonna win it with Malcolm Miller and Chris Boucher right now.
It's wild. That's like, that's insane. And like Lowry plus bench. I think that you know what? I'm gonna take, like, I don't know how we fight for someone's Hall of Fame case, but I'm gonna write something about Lowry plus bench, and I'm gonna be like, look at the scrubs that he plays against and wins, okay? This is what we're basing his Hall of Fame canvas just
this
on.
Can't be your first point of enumeration. It's like
it's gonna be point number one. I'm gonna be thesis, like,
Kyle Lowry's a Hall of Famer. Number one, he's great with bench players.
Lowry with Greg Steemsma, okay?
Yeah.
Lowry with Tyler Hansbro.
Man, Kyle. Yeah, what a guy. And now we're getting to the point where, you know, like, you know, one of the biggest things that was such a shame about the season getting, you know, delayed and potentially canceled is just like, Kyle was having such a good year. This is the thing. He was age defined. Like, I remember, like, because if you look at Kyle's numbers in a three season coming into this year, it was like his numbers were decreasing every single year. He was becoming more of a facilitator.
Yeah, Will, can we discuss this? Because I remember someone saying he was old and past his prime, and oh, he can't, Lowry can't get any twos. Lowry can't get to the basket.
It was true.
Like, distinctly remember hearing that. I'm joking.
No, it was true. It was true for a while. Kyle Lowry was shooting crab at elite levels at the rim. And then this year, he like suddenly went back to being like an efficient driver. His free throw attempts doubled.
His free throw rate just going up is so surprising. And just watching him bait rookies, I love when Lowry goes against a rookie. I love it.
Yes. And that's actually one of the things, too. It's just like the ultimate vet move. Of like, because I've seen it happen to the Raptors so many times of just like a young player who's good getting punked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when he put that pass through Archie Diagono's legs or whatever to OG for the assist, and then he made that meme of him like with that like lemon face on the side, like, ooh. That's the play.
Do you want to do that one more time? I don't know what meme you're talking about.
Yeah, producer, please put up that picture of this meme.
Yeah, Lowry's the best. That's going to literally, I'm going to write out Lowry's argument for making the Hall of Fame. And point one is going to be Lowry plus bench.
Okay. Point two is he crawled under George Hill's legs. Point three is he made he really popularized the towel look on NBA players. Last year,
sister Lowry.
No, seriously, Kyle Lowry, like last year, like every time he went to the bench, he just boom, like just sitting there like this.
He had the Hydra wife, Hydra kids, like towel around his head.
So anyway, I just, you know, look, I just wanted to appreciate Kyle, you know, because he's done so much for this franchise.
Happy birthday, Kyle. Yeah, honestly, I think
happy belated birthday.
What you were saying, like, he's been one of, not to make this go on even longer, but he's just been considered old for a good chunk of his time here, where we've been talking about the decline of Lowry since probably 2016, 2017.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2017, I think, was the first year.
Yeah, that 2016, 2017 season, and it would have been, I mean, like, look at him now. It's 2020, and he's having a great season. There's not really been a considerable drop off from that 2016-2017 season. He's probably gotten better.
And then, and just to tie it all back together, that's the Kyle Lowry story. Like, he's overlooked, he's counted out, but he persists, he stays, he wins you games, and now he's a franchise legend.
Yeah, scratch that. To end this, I'm going to say Kyle Lowry's not just a Hall of Famer. He's the greatest basketball player in the history of the game.
Okay. We finally surpassed Assad saying that Kyle is better than Steve Nash and Jason Kidd combined.
What? Has Steve Nash won a ring?
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't remember Steve Nash's ring.
Yeah.
I don't remember Steve Nash, you know, making it past the conference finals even. So
what about when Steve Nash was wearing a 4XL International Clothiers shirt when he won MVP for the second time? Why did he decide that?
Do you remember Jason Kidd last year? Oof. How old is he? Was he around what Kyle is now, like 34? He didn't make a shot to end his, like, remember he was on the Knicks?
He was on the Knicks. And he didn't make a single shot?
Yeah.
That was awkward. It was like, shout out to the Knicks for having him and Pablo Prigioni. Like, how old do you want your boyfriend?
Pablo was older than I am as a rookie. And I'm old.
So that's the Kyle Lowry podcast, you know, like, again, just thank you, Kyle Lowry. You're the greatest Raptor of all time.
Greatest basketball player in the history of the sport.
When you retire, your jersey's going up in the stands. Number 7, definitely. Maybe number 3. I don't know.
OG, I don't think so.
OG's still using it, but.
For OG. That's going to happen.
What do you want the Kyle Lowry statue to look like?
Ooh.
A lot of great things to pick from.
There's so many. I used to say I want it to be a Lowry and DeMar moment together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mainly because DeMar deserves a statue with Lowry because he's the reason he's getting a statue. But outside of that, I'm kidding. DeMar definitely deserves a statue. I'm kidding. Okay. But outside of that, I think at this point now, because Kyle has gone on to win a ring without DeMar, I think he deserves his own statue. And I think it should have something to do with his championship season.
What about when Kyle Lowry was like hugging the hell out of the ball at the end of the game 6 against the Eastern Conference Finals?
Oh, that's a good one. I also just like when he was like doing that and his like fist pump in the air. There's so many.
Yeah.
Is DeMar a dunk on Tolliver? Is it just him dunking there? That's a good one.
There's a lot of good DeMar poster dunks to post pictures.
Oh, DeMar, I have the perfect one.
Yeah?
But on the line. Just like draw a line.
Yo, come on. Why did this turn into the DeMar Slider podcast?
Yeah, that is legit. He's so good.
I swear to Mark, more threes with a foot on the line than actual threes.
Like, he's a good three-point shooter. We just have to put a line behind the three-point line, and I guarantee you he's shooting like 40% from deep.
DeMar DeRozan with a high school three-point shooting line would be Steph Curry, who could dunk. It would have been amazing.
Love DeMar. Honestly, second greatest Raptor of all time. I'll give him that.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
No?
I don't know, to be honest. Number one is definitely Kyle for me. Number two is hard.
Number two might be Vince. Okay.
Yeah. And then three might be Kawhi because he was legitimately that good.
Then we get into, the talk about what's greatest versus best. Because Kawhi won the team a championship and took them over. Yeah, it might be Kawhi. But, DeMar's significance to a lot. Yeah, it's Kawhi. Never mind.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Great talk.
Hey, look, listen. Being fourth best in all-time franchise history is nothing to scoff at.
No.
Yeah. So.
DeMar's had a great career.
No, DeMar's had an amazing career.
He's had a very good career.
Yeah. There's no shame whatsoever in being behind Kyle, Vince, and Kawhi, man.
Yeah.
And the only reason I put Kawhi that high is, like, Kawhi's debatable, too, because, like, that's, again, he only had 1 year, but, like, Kawhi was matching Michael Jordan's records in the playoffs. Like, what are we talking about here? 1 year of that is more important than a lot of things.
For sure. I mean, DeMar's literally had KD jealous of him a couple of times already. You know, he talked about his footwork. He talked about his relationship with Kyle. Like, when you have KD jealous of you, you're doing great, DeMar.
Yeah, there you go. I love Kawhi. Man, listen, DeMar's... If you don't love DeMar, just like he's like family, you know, like not perfect, but like he's.
I'll joke family. About DeMar, but as soon as a non-Raptor fan does it, I'm ready to fight.
Yeah, if you say anything about Chris Middleton vis-a-vis DeMar DeRozan, I'm fighting you. If you say anything,
listen. Remember? Here's the thing. They talk about DeMar, where is he in the playoffs? Chris Middleton in the conference finals. Then going off in the summer and doing that for his country. Listen, he should be arrested for treason. He should be arrested for treason. Okay? That was disrespectful.
Yeah, no, he was really struggling against like Turkey and Czech Republic and whoever else they were playing.
Just like he was struggling against Norman Powell and Kyle Lowry. Okay?
Yeah, Kyle Lowry, man. Stealing the ball from Chris Middleton.
I love that. I'll say I love that because it was exactly like it was one of my favorite We the North like moments when I think about like the team coming together. Mm. Where I remember this, it was also on Open Gym. I think Amir was like at home watching it. That's why they had it on Open Gym. Where Kyle steals the ball, does the exact same thing, and gets it to DeMar DeRozan.
The Celtics game?
Yeah, the Celtics game.
Yeah. Yeah, he picked off Marcus Smart. Yeah, Kyle Lowry, man. Just an incredible dude, man. How many times have I said on this podcast? I just like really appreciate this guy.
Me too.
Part of the reason I have a career, you know? Him and Masai. I should really pay a tax or something.
Tim Leiwicki. Shout out to Tim Leiwicki. Yeah. Really turned this thing around for TFC and the Raptors.
And then he just dipped. For like, he was here for like 2 years and he was like, here's all this stuff. And then he left.
I believe in magic because of him.
Yeah. All right. Well, that does it for the podcast.
Thanks.
Imam, what do you want to plug? Where can people find you and your work?
Dishes and Dimes. Check us out. We are an all-women's podcast. There are a bunch of hosts. Not all of them are going to talk about DeMar DeRozan like I did. In fact, most of them hate me for talking about DeMar DeRozan the way that I just did. They also love Fred VanVleet. They'd hate me for the way that I talk about him, too. But, so it's 8 or 9 women, depending on the day that you catch us. And we love basketball, and we talk about it, and we all have different opinions. So please check us out. We're rotating hosts. So every episode that you listen to, you're going to listen to a different voice, and it's fun.
And you've also mentioned that you're going to tweet out a bunch of Kyle Lowry stories on Twitter. So
what's your Twitter handle? I mean, that's like a regular day. It's @_nopename. That's NOPENAME.
Why did you retire the last one, the last handle? Sometimes I can't find you because I'm like, oh, that's Boo You, but
so Boo You Whore, which is a Mean Girls quote, was my last one, and I really love it, but a lot of people didn't. So, you know, I thought I would change it, and I don't have a name yet. Nope Name isn't my name, it's just I don't have a name. So We're currently Nope Name. We're workshopping. If you guys have ideas, hit me up.
Yeah, I think Lowry Burner is already taken, so you know.
Yeah, and she's hilarious. Like, shout please go follow her. She's so funny.
Yeah, I think she has a podcast too.
She does.
Are you guys gonna recruit her?
we had her on. Me, Sidra had her on. It was so great. Please go check that out.
So there you go. All right, thanks everyone for listening to the podcast. Again, as a reminder, there will be daily updates on, you know, COVID-19 as it relates to the NBA and the Raptors. So check out for that. And also there will be weekly podcasts where I'm going to go like super in depth, basically, into the people that are with the Raptors. Next week, the focus will be Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet and their rise together, because they came in the same draft class. And obviously they've had a lot of stories along the way. So I'm going to have another guest to talk really in depth about Pascal and Fred. But for now, thank you, Iman, for talking.
Thanks for
being here at the Church of Kalari.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.